Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Alexis the Midwife.
And I'm Becky the Doula.
Welcome to Notes from the Mother Box, where we will be having real and frank conversations about the highs and lows of the parenting journey.
This week, we'll be taking a closer look at pregnancy and birth during the pandemic and sharing another positive birth story with you. If you enjoy this episode, don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and follow us over on Instagram.
We are delighted that we have a fantastic partnership this season with Sophie Le Giraffe, especially because this year is Sophie's 60th birthday.
And we have some exciting things lined up in Sophie's honour across this season, including a special birthday celebration episode.
Now, Becky, I've read that how Sophie is made is a closely guarded secret.
Yeah, it's all very mysterious, isn't it? The company in France who makes Sophie has kept it so close to their chest for 60 years now. But I do know that she is produced traditionally and they don't use any high-tech machines.
If you want to see the full range of Sophie Le Giraffe products, head over to sophielegiraffe.co.uk. So pop the kettle on, pour yourself a cuppa, get comfy and enjoy this week's episode of Notes from the Mother Box. This week, we are so grateful to have Charlie come and join us and talk to us about her pregnancy, induction, birth and life of the newborn during the pandemic.
Charlie is a TV makeup artist, mum to a gorgeous little girl and little sister to Lex.
Woo! VIP! The VIP's in the house. My only sib has joined us for the show.
Hello, ladies.
Hello. Thanks for coming on, Charlie.
Oh, no worries. It's an absolute pleasure.
Let's start, Charlie, by talking about, so you were pregnant all through the pandemic. What preparation were you able to do for birth? Because we know that there were so many restrictions with all classes and, you know, all the things that you would usually do to get ready.
Yeah, I mean, it was bonkers. So just as we came into the pandemic, really, I just hit 12 weeks. So it really was the duration of the pregnancy. And I actually had friends of mine that were also giving birth around that time as well. So it was, it was a pretty mad time. But preparation wise, I'm lucky that I know you two, really. I mean, this is going to be a big sell on you two, because obviously, Lex, you run Bump and Baby as an instructor for them. And, you know, you obviously do hypnobirthing as well. Mm. So we did both of those things, which was great, really, because I think it's only when you do those courses and you realize how little you actually know. And I think I started reading some of the books that people tell you to, you know, that you should read and things. And actually, they could be really helpful to some people. But for me, it really brought on a bit of anxiety and panic when I was
they
kind of
reading.
They
can be a bit overwhelming, can't they? I think sometimes the kind of bigger manually books, I think sometimes they've got so much information that almost, like for me, I just kept putting them on the shelf and not reading them because they made me feel a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I think they've got some really, you know, important information. And for some people, that's going to really resonate with them. But for me, I'd pick one up and I'd start to read a chapter, even though it was really positive, I would find my heart beating a bit quicker. And as I was reading other people's testimonials, maybe I wasn't quite ready to hear it. I think there's a time that there is a certain point where you are ready. And for me at that point, I wasn't. So it was really good to actually go on a course and meet some different people. And I wasn't going to do the Bump and Baby. I think I'd said to Lex, I'm not sure about doing this whole, whether you're doing NCT or Bump and Baby or whatever it is online, I'm not sure about doing it on Zoom. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's going to, you know, transfer onto that. And the whole point is to kind of meet some people going through similar things. But actually, it's been really great to meet those couples, even though we obviously haven't like properly all met in the flesh, but actually just we all started a WhatsApp group and everyone was talking, and actually it just showed that, you know, everyone just wanted to come together at that time. Everyone was in the same boat. All the couples were feeling the same thing. And actually ongoing, there's still a WhatsApp group, you know, and happening. And obviously, Becky, I came to see you for some amazing prenatal massages as well that massively helped. And postnatally, which has been incredible because it's so, pregnancy is just so physical on the body, isn't it? From your hips and glutes and your rib cage moving and everything like that. So that was amazing, not actually just for my body, but for my mind as well, just to relax me into it. And if I was ever having a moment where I just needed a bit of a release and a calm, that was definitely it. And I think that we spoke so much through our sessions, didn't we? I was that annoying person that spoke the whole duration, hour and a half of the massage, just like, what about
I'm like that.
But I think actually a lot of my pre and postnatal clients say that it isn't just a massage, and actually it isn't. You know, the fact is that, you know, Lex and I have worked with women for so long that we obviously have so much experience that it's nice to actually talk through, and, you know, while we're massaging, we can kind of talk through stuff. And actually I think that helps you to relax as well, because you're sort of coming, you know, you're getting all your ideas and you're having thoughts about what you want to do. And I think that's just as important part of the treatment, actually.
For me, I felt like it was invaluable. I mean, I love having massages. I know some people, you know, that for them, it's not for them. But for me, I absolutely love it. And it really, I mean, it massively helped through my pregnancy process. And I couldn't rate it enough as being a real physical thing. And at that time, obviously, I mean, there is a certain touch element to it of comfort, you know. And I think also, if we actually think about it, during the pandemic, you couldn't, you know, you couldn't have that side. And I think there was a real nurturing side to it that felt real sense of comfort. And I know Becky, you said that you know, you've had ladies also have, you know, a release of emotion and crying and all kinds of things happen in that space. So I mean, for me that was massively important for my own mental health and just physical relaxation, I guess.
Well, I think the workshops, like the antenatal classes and the massage and anything that you do, just gives you some sort of scheduled space to process, doesn't it? Because otherwise life is so busy, we could reach our due date without having done anything to get ourselves ready. And I think it's important to have that stuff in place, that's like a dedicated time to focus on, you know, how are you feeling, what's going on, you know, are you feeling ready, what kind of birth you're sort of planning for, even though we know we can't plan it really. It's kind of but you know, just getting ready basically. And I think it's been amazing how with the antenatal classes, how Zoom has worked, actually, because when it all first started and Lecky said she was having to go online, I was thinking the same, like, how are you going to do that? But it's been amazing, hasn't Lex?
It managed to move over really quickly. And I have to say, and Becky will vouch for me on this one, we are both complete technophobes. We are useless on computers. And I'm not ashamed to say that. So I was wondering how I was going to get Zoom up and running and be able to use it and make the classes interesting and fun and get people to be able to build rapport with each other and relationships. But very, very luckily, it turned out that our Bump and Baby Club classes translated quite well online. And we were able to still use a lot of the elements, and we used the breakout rooms, and we had, you know, able to get the couples to go into smaller groups and get to know each other a little bit. And I set them a task or an activity, but really I wanted them to have a chinwag and a bit of a goss with each other and get to know each other a bit, with the hopes that at some point when the restrictions were lifted, they'd be able to get together, go out for a walk, have a coffee together, things like that. And obviously this year's just, since March 2020, it's been such a roller coaster. And there've been periods, little windows of opportunity where you are allowed, so to speak, to meet up with more people. I know, Charlie, there was one point where you were able to go out with like six of the group in one, last summer, I think it was, like together and go and get a coffee. And then restrictions came back in again and you weren't allowed to do that anymore. So there've been these little windows. But I also think taking antenatal classes when you're having a baby can be so invaluable, because even if you have friends who've also got little ones, and they might be a 6-month-old, a 1-year-old, an 18-month-old, there is nothing like going through an experience in real time with parents who are you know, at the same point that you're at. They've got a baby that's within a couple of months of the age of your baby. They are awake at 4 o'clock in the morning and 2 o'clock and 11 o'clock at night. And they are going through the highs and the lows in motion with you, and so they understand it. Whereas I think if you're talking to a mum who's got a 1-year-old, you know what, they've already moved on to the next level and they're thinking about all the highs and lows of that period of time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you find that, Charlie, like sometimes having friends who've got babies of a very similar age can be really quite, it can be quite comforting just to know and validating actually that people are going through something similar.
Yeah, massively. I really do. I think it's been great to have that level of support of everyone that is literally kind of going through what you're going through. And there is, you know, it's obviously like the build up to it with pregnancy is massive, but then, you know, the fourth trimester and the postnatal stage is also so huge and so often not spoken about that you find yourself, you are going to these groups and you're questioning things, and whether it be you know, baby rashes that, you know, can be just as their bodies, their little bodies are adapting to the air and fabric around them, to to anything, to sleepless nights, to physically what the women are kind of in their recovery and how everyone's doing. I think it is massively important.
So at some point during your pregnancy you started to toy with the idea of a home birth, didn't you? And you were wondering whether that might be something for you. Now, interestingly, down in Brighton and Hove, we have incredibly high home birth rates. We do have, I think about it, Becky, it's like 1 to 2 in 10, isn't it? It's compared to the, I think the rest of the country is about 1 in 100, something along those lines. I think we've got really high rates.
Ours is really, really high. And also what we do really well here is it's quite a sort of fluid option. So you can say, I'd like to start at home and then see how I go. So it kind of makes people who are a little bit on the fence, gives them the option to kind of start at home. And then if they want to transfer in, they can. But often if things are going well at home, you don't want to. So whereas in some of the trusts I work with in London, it was, you had to choose one or the other. You couldn't sort of keep it open like that.
What was your thinking around that, Charlie? What was going through your mind at the time?
You know, I really didn't know for a really long time what I fancied doing, where I wanted to give birth. The whole subject matter I kind of put to the back of my brain for quite a while. And I think initially I had just thought, I'm going into hospital, that's what I'm going to do. And then, you know, listening to various people's stories. And then obviously with the pandemic and things were changing in hospitals all the time. And so when I had spoken to midwives and to both of you and to friends of mine, it seemed like there were a lot more, you know, it was basically you can either limit yourself to the hospital or you can put yourself down for a home birth. And if you end up transferring into hospital, that's okay too. So I think that had guided me really to the process. And I wasn't 100% sure. And then when obviously they'd started making it so, I think also not having Pete there with me initially had also frightened me a bit, if I'm honest. I think I'd heard of friends of mine going in and having to leave their partners at the door, so to speak, for the first part of their labour or if they were being induced. And it scared me a bit. So it almost allowed me to kind of gain some level of control back.
To
make that choice to have the baby at home. I thought, well, if I need to go into hospital, I'll go into hospital. But at least I've got more control over when I go in and whether Pete can be with me. And, you know, and also just I'd heard lovely things about being in your own environment and how that can make your, you know, make your labour you know, I don't know, go faster or better, I'm not entirely sure, but
And we were lucky as well, actually, down in Brighton, because Brighton and Hove and this part of Sussex, because throughout last year, when a lot of the protocols and the guidances were changing, where a lot of the hospitals were needing to stop home births being offered for periods of time because of the ambulance service being so pushed, we were able to still carry on down here, which was really, really fortuitous. And then in January, because of the rates again, that stopped for a month down here or so. And then it came back in again that they were putting home births back on the table. So you're right, Charlie, it's been the strangest old year, because I remember talking to groups last year that I was teaching. And normally the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists change their protocols and their guidances, you know, sometimes every few years, even, like, it's not, It's not always super regular. And they were changing their guidance and protocols two or three times in a week at one period.
Yeah.
So it was like times that we've never experienced before. So that is, you know, absolutely was the case for sure.
I had a lovely midwife called Sally Burrows, who was really, really lovely and really supportive throughout all of my appointments. And she really expressed that it was a lovely home birth team down here, kind of what you were saying, Becky.
Mm-hmm.
And just given me the confidence, really, to go that route. And also to be confident if I needed to change my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
We have a lot of choice in Brighton, don't we? I mean, I know obviously restrictions have scuppered that slightly, but generally as birthing goes, I feel like we have some amazing choices here. And the home birth team are literally like doulas, you know, most, and actually even the ward-based, most of them are trained in aromatherapy oils, loads of them do massage. And so, yeah, I just feel like we're so well looked after in Brighton.
We are looked after. But what I will say is that there are many variables of birth.
Yep.
And in the end, Charlie's birth took a slightly different pathway to the one that she was imagining. And Charlie, can you tell us a little bit more? Because, of course, you did end up having an induction, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I did. It was week 39 for me and my waters broke on the Monday. I'd woken up in the middle of the night needing to go to the toilet, I thought. And as I stood up, what appeared to be weed myself.
Did you get a gush? A gush or a trickle? Was it a trickle?
Yeah, a trickle.
Yeah.
Because it really did feel, yeah. I was quite confused and I woke Pete up and I said to him, I think something's happened. Something's happened. I'm not sure what's happened. Because I genuinely, it was the middle of the night. I was a bit confused as to what had happened. So we called the maternity assessment unit. He said to me, it sounds like your waters have broken and we'll be sending one of the, because I'd opted for a home birth, they would send round someone from the home team to check me in the morning.
Amazing.
Which happened. One of the ladies came round and they did an internal and had a little look to see if there was any pooling of water, which there was. Lex, you know what I'm talking about when I say of the pooling of water, because I didn't know anything about that. Yeah. I said, how can you tell? How can you actually tell whether it is my waters or that I just haven't got so much pressure on my bladder that, you know, I've done a wee? And she said, I can see all the pooling in your cervical area. So that happened. And she just said, relax, you know, pack all your bits that you might need and just take it really easy, really gentle, go for a walk, have some nice food. But, you know, so we thought that was it at that point, you know, that evening, that obviously the night before we couldn't sleep very well because we thought it was going to happen any minute at that point.
Yeah.
And then the days started to roll by and by Wednesday, the labour still hadn't come on at that point. And so I was advised to call them in the morning, which I did, and they said they wanted me to come in.
Yeah, absolutely. So you headed in, you were given your timings, you rocked up. And if I remember rightly, you weren't quite sure what to expect and you didn't even have your coat with you. Is that right? It was something along those lines.
Yeah, I think I really, in my head by that point, had thought I was going to still have the baby at home. Yeah. I'd been told, I think at that point, where do they say how many hours you can wait from when your waters break to when your labour should come on and the risk of infection? Essentially,
yes.
That was all stuff that I didn't really know, you know, if I'm honest. At that point, I came in. There was a 2.5 hour wait at Brighton for the car park. So a really ridiculously.
I didn't remember that bit.
Yeah. And so, and at the time we thought, well, I'm going to come out. Pete's going to go back home because he's not allowed in the hospital anyways. Yeah. I'll be taking myself up there. So I left him in the car and I walked up to the maternity assessment unit. Mm-hmm. And when I got up there, I was met by one of the, they were all very relaxed up there and I had to do a COVID test.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things I did. I spoke to one of the midwives up there who basically said, we want you to kind of stay in and be checked and we want to monitor you for a little bit.
Mm.
So I was taken to another part of the ward at that point to be connected up to like the heart machines, check all the that baby's heartbeat was okay. And at that point, it started to become clear that I probably wasn't going home.
Right, yeah.
One of the ladies came around and said to me, it's been 36 hours now since your waters have broken. And it's not a case of if you're going to could get an infection, but also when. So eventually you'll get an infection, and it's just about catching that and making sure that you're both safe.
Yeah,
and I think that was quite new to me, to be honest. That, like, all of this kind of felt a bit of a shock in a way, because I just wasn't, I guess you're never expecting how it probably does go, but I certainly wasn't expecting it to go that way. So at that point when they said essentially you will get an infection, it's just a matter of time, that's when I thought, right, we're staying in and we're going to go through this process. So
a bit of a curveball, a bit of a change in direction from what you were expecting. And so you gave Pete a call, and what sort of a plan did they make with you in the hospital? What was the next steps?
So next step was to start with the pessary.
Yeah.
And essentially, and they didn't really say after then. They just said, are you happy to start with the pessary, knowing what I then knew, what they'd explained to me. So it was all my choice. And I was happy to go forward with it. I did go forward. I had the pessary. And I think at that point you could have visiting hours. So Pete came back in the visiting hour, and they said to me that they were fine for me to go off and have a walk about just to see if anything occurred, but nothing was happening. And I just remember the lady next to me who was having her fourth baby came by, I mean, it would have been hours later at that point, maybe 3 or 4 hours later. And she said, oh my goodness, you're handling this so well. And I was like, nothing's happening. It's not working.
It's not poker face.
Yeah, not just super hardcore.
What point, Charlie, did you go for a walk around Brighton? I remember you saying you went out of the hospital and you went for a little walk locally.
That's it. And we went to a pub, which is controversial, isn't it?
Really?
Because we hadn't been to a pub the whole time. We hadn't gone the whole time. And basically we'd walked down towards Kemp Town, and eventually ended up there was nowhere open. There wasn't hardly anywhere open at that point. And we just said, should we just go to the pub and have a glass of water and an orange juice? We're probably like just the people that the pub owners wanted to see after a whole lot of lockdown, someone that's gonna have a free water and an orange juice. But yeah, so we went in there and kind of just took a moment to kind of really absorb what was about to happen.
Yeah,
I think it had taken that long to really see how it was all panning out and review it at that moment, because you still don't know at that time what's going to happen. So we walked back up to the hospital. Pete had to leave again, and at that point they said to me, one of the midwives came and spoke to me, and she said, we're going to have to put you on the drip.
Yeah,
essentially
the hormone drip.
The hormone drip. The pessary is not working, so we're going to go ahead with Cinto. The hormone drip, and at which point this will probably take place. And they gave me the time, and they said that I was to call Pete and get him to come back in, and they would explain the whole process thoroughly to us when he'd come in. So by that point, I think it was like 9-10 o'clock when I ended up going up to the labor ward. And at that point, still no contractions, no feelings at that point. So it really was going to be a case of, this is going to happen quite quickly.
Yeah.
Also, I was going to mention, but before, which always makes you laugh, Lex, that I did have a moment when I was waiting with the pessary, waiting for it to work, kind of absorbing the fact that the home birth was going further and further away from me, where Pete had dropped off a bag and I devoured a whole packet of Kinder.
That's right.
And I was trying to find something on Netflix to watch that wasn't going to spike any kind of emotions, and I ended up just watching Taylor Swift on tour. It was very bizarre, but it seemed to be those two things seemed to keep me calm in that moment in time.
Well, actually, often what you do find is when you are in early labour, or if you're in the early part of your induction, because it can take a while, and I think people are often quite surprised if they go in to be induced that it can take quite a while, is just to kind of like have those normal moments amongst something that feels absolutely not like a normal life experience, a completely extraordinary experience, really.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
We hope you're enjoying our chat with Charlie so far, but now for a little ad break, because Lex and I want to tell you some more about the fabulous Sophie Le Giraffe and why she's so popular with babies all around the world.
From the age of 3 months, Sophie is designed to stimulate each of your little one's senses, the next of which is touch. Touch is the first means a baby has to communicate with the outside world, and you'll notice that Sophie feels soft, like baby's parent's skin. And that stimulates physiological and emotional responses in baby that soothes them and promotes healthy growth and well-being.
And as the series goes on, we'll be going through all the other senses that make Sophie so special for your little ones, as if we needed more reasons to love her. But right now, let's get back to the second part of our brilliant chat with Charlie.
So they took you to the room that you're going to be staying in, and what happened next?
So my lovely midwives came down, Eleanor and a student midwife called Lindsay. They came down to my ward, helped me carry all my stuff up, obviously, took me to this this room, which actually, you know, looked really lovely. It was kind of a pinky purpley room. They dimmed all the lights down. It was nighttime by that point, so it was dark outside. And in Brighton, you overlook the pier and the sea, and you generally get, I think, good views from up there.
Yeah.
And I'd bought some, I don't know, £1 tea lights from Sainsbury's, I think it was, popped them out. And I think someone previously before had left some tea lights too. So it was all lit up, like
amazing.
Monica and Chandler's engagement on Friends, you know. It was all lit up and dimly, and it was calm. Pete had come in. They took us through the process of what would happen with the Cinto, which you, Alex, you probably would be able to explain or recall better than I can. I decided to have an epidural because I was aware at that point, to be fair, I'd spoken to you, Lex.
Yeah, no, totally. And we talk about this, don't we, Becky? And oftentimes women will opt if they're going to have an induction just with the propess or the pessary, then they'll just see obviously how they respond to it and what happens. But often if women do end up having a Syntocin on drip alongside that about to be commenced, they'll opt to have an epidural as well, because it can feel quite intense, because essentially you're asking the body to do something it wasn't preparing to do in that moment necessarily. What do you think about that, Becky?
Yeah, I agree. And you don't have a lot of the natural kind of opiate hormones aren't that high yet. So when you have that latent phase, you've got all those hormones are building, aren't they? And when you go in with Cinto, they're not at the same level as they would be. So we do often say, be gentle with yourself. And also, Charlie, I remember we were chatting and like you'd already been awake for a couple of nights, hadn't you, by that point? And kind of, you know, not and you were going into another night. And this is what can often happen when people have Cinto. Often it can happen after a couple of nights of maybe, you know, naggy hormones. So we often say you have to look at the whole picture. And if you're tired, you're going to be knackered, aren't you? So you have to kind of, I think it's about looking at all the bits. And
if you're very tired, the adrenaline can obviously take over as well and stop the oxytocin doing what it needs to do. But obviously with the Syntocin, it's slightly different, but for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And also I thought that water would play a big part of my pain relief. I mean, at home, I'd got a birth pool that I'd hired. If I was to go into hospital, I thought I'd still kind of try and opt if there was one available to go in the water. And so to have that taken away, all of a sudden things felt a little bit limited. And I hadn't been anti having the epidural, really. It just wasn't necessarily a part. It was there in the background if I needed it. And so when we chatted it through, and you really just don't know at that point how quick it's going to come on, how you're going to respond to it, how you're going to feel about it. So, I went with the epidural, which I had, and they hit, which was all fine. They hit a little nerve in my back. I remember that, and Pete almost passed out.
From your facial expression.
Yeah, exactly. From my facial expression. I think he looked at me and it made him feel really weird, because it was almost like a sciatic nerve, but it was all very quickly resolved. It was, you know, it was absolutely fine. The guy just pulled the epidural back ever so slightly, and then it was absolutely released. And from that moment on, we watched a bit of Mary Berry on the laptop, and it was all very, very relaxed and chilled, to be honest. And I could see the contractions coming. Obviously, I couldn't feel anything. I could feel, I was still able, so I had a walking epidural, which means that you can go to the toilet. You are attached to all your wires and cables and everything else that you're walking with. And they have to check every time you get up, they check your leg strength.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you were totally mobile, weren't you? Which when Lex told me, I was amazed, because when I had an epidural, when I had to transfer in from my home birth, and like you, Charlie, I was in the water at home and I loved it. But when I had to transfer in, I was about 8 centimetres, but I'd stopped dilating, I'd stopped contracting. So I had to have the Cinto. And I was like, nope. And now I'm in a mood. I want an epidural. I'm tired. I haven't got my water anymore. But mine was completely immobile. And actually, I didn't really like it very much because I could not feel my legs at all. So I would have loved, you could actually walk to the loo, couldn't you?
Yes. So I could, yeah. Incredible. They do check you, and you are numb in areas. So like I could, to be honest with you, you know, I could feel it down below when I'd have a contraction. Mm. I could feel that pressure still in that area, not particularly in my stomach or my, you know, or in my pelvic area, but, you know, where the baby was essentially.
Yeah.
And so I could feel that pressure as it was coming. And I think it was about halfway through, because they would say, right, every 20 minutes you can top up. And about halfway through, I went to go to the toilet and they put pressure on my legs. And at that point, my thighs were starting to feel a bit numb. So at that point, it was like if I wanted to decrease it, I had to stop topping myself up in order to start. And at that they kind of, you know, with the Cinto, it's also, I mean, to a certain degree, they're laying out their pathway of where like timing should be, and obviously it is a response from your body, but at the same time they're kind of guiding you to a certain point of time, really. So I think at that point where I started to feel slightly numb, I laid off of it, and I think it was like 4 or 5 hours that, you know, I was essentially having contractions through the Cinto, which I couldn't, you know, massively feel. I'd laid off on the epidural, and then they'd said to me, you have to wait 2 hours. Now I didn't realize that part. The waiting for 2 hours, because I had a lip on my cervix, is it, Lex? Is that what they call it? So I was 9.5 centimetres dilated, and they wanted to really wait for the baby to drop down to give me a fighting chance to try and push her out.
Yeah. Also for the you know, with the ejection, the uterus pushing down, bearing down and getting the baby born, with the epidural, because there's slightly less sensation, the lower deep position a baby can be in the pelvis, once you do start going with the pushing, definitely can be beneficial. So with epidurals, they'll tend to say for 1 to 2 hours after it's fully dilated,
don't they?
I don't think they talk about that much, do they?
And actually I remember quite early on in my doulaing, actually, we had a hilarious one where one of my ladies had an epidural and they said, okay, you're fully, we're going to give you an hour for descent. And she said, okay, fine. So she said, I'm going to sleep some more, so I've got some energy to push the baby out. And the midwife was kind of checking, and baby was decelling a little bit, so they were a little bit concerned because she had been on Cinto. And so she said, I'm going to call the doctor in just to have a little look. And we said, okay. And I think it had been 15 minutes since she'd been said fully, and they were going to give an hour for descent. And the doctor came in and just said, oh, I'm just going to have a little look. And as he kind of sort of opened her legs, the head just popped out. I mean, it came out so fast. It was like a proper ejection reflex. And he was like, oh, well, that's why the baby was decelling. It was, you know, trying to get out closed legs, basically.
Being squeezed.
So it was a total shock. So, yeah, sometimes they can still surprise us.
Definitely. All of a sudden, it just started to happen. And I could feel that. Even though I had the epidural, I could still have that feeling of needing to bear down and needing to push.
And that's the clever thing about these mobile epidurals and these low-dose epidurals, is that women say they get that sensation so they can work with their bodies as they're bearing down. They can feel that sort of pressure, that ejection type of a response from the body. And that's brilliant, because obviously one of the issues with the epidurals is you lose the sensation and can't work with what your body's doing. They've come a long, long way over the years, epidurals, and it's so clever, Charlie, what they're able to do these days.
Yeah.
And it's 100% true what they say, because I definitely had that feeling of I need to go to the bathroom now. And they were like, no, lovely, you're just having a baby.
So you
that's
felt
what that feels like.
Yeah.
I was like, and Yeah, and so we kind of went through those motions. That I have to say, for me, because obviously I couldn't feel a lot to that point, the bearing back down a bit for 2 hours and not trying not to push. Because they said to me, look, if you need to push, go with it. But ultimately, we're trying to kind of give you more time for the baby to come down a little bit more before we crack on pushing. That felt the longest part for me, really, the need to push and not really being... meant, you know, not really being allowed to push. Not I feel like that makes it sound like a strict thing. It wasn't a strict thing. Yeah. You know, I wasn't gonna, you know, no one was gonna tell me off if I started to push, I'm sure. But yeah, it was that I should wait for a bit, and I desperately wanted to. So I going with that felt, you know, more uncomfortable, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I guess coming through to the pushing stage. So we came through Pete says that apparently all, you know, the veins popped out of my head, but frankly I was pushing a baby out, so of course they did.
It's hard work.
You're giving it welly,
hard
aren't you?
Work. Yeah. And you know, and genuinely at that point, it's a strange feeling, really. I didn't think it was painful. It was just a lot, you know, it was a lot of exertion as they were coming and as they were telling me right, push, and you'd go through those, and they felt quite long, those, like, keep on pushing, and then it would be like, and just rest, and then it would be like, and go again, and you'd be like, hang on a minute. So yeah, physically on that, but not for me. I didn't feel painful, and I knew at one point or other there was a point where I could, it was weird, out of body type of thing. I could hear and tune into different conversations that were happening. And at one point I heard the midwife say to the other head midwife, we might need to get the doctor in. And I don't know what was going on in that conversation at that point. I think I'd been pushing for around an hour at that point, and whether they wanted to get baby out. And so, and there'd been a couple of times when I was squatting, they'd put a clip, hadn't they, Lex? They put a clip for the baby's heartbeat, to check heartbeat. And they were kept on, the band around my waist kept on slipping where they were monitoring it, and it was engaging with my heartbeat. Mm-hmm. So,
I see.
So they kept on, that kept on happening. So I heard that type of conversation happening, and I just thought, no, I've got to get her out. I actively remember kind of having a word in my head, quite, you know, like silently with myself, and thinking, I've got to get her out. I've got to get her out now. And to the point that when they said, just before the baby's head was going to come out, they said, and just take a moment. I just carried on pushing. I just pushed straight through it.
Oh, darling.
Probably in hindsight, should have waited.
And then out she came.
Out she came.
Oh, lovely. And how long did you stay in the hospital at that point before you went back home again with your baby?
I mean, we were in there we were up in the labour ward. Mm-hmm. I guess there was things to be done. I had a second degree tear, so I had to get some stitches, and just there was various different midwives going on breaks and things. So we ended up, we were up there for most of the morning, and then Pete left.
Oh, lovely.
And then I went downstairs to the postnatal ward, and really that time just seemed to fly by. So it was quite a strange time at that point. Goes in a very weird way, doesn't it? It just
really does.
The rest of the day went, and we were home by 9 o'clock that night.
Oh, lovely. Fantastic.
So, Charlie, we know it's not been easy for new parents, obviously, of late, because, again, a lot of the classes are online or not happening at all. Is there anything that you've been able to do to kind of meet up with other mums or to support yourself a little bit in the postnatal period?
I think obviously Zoom's played a massive part with friends and families, and that's been massive. And we've done lockdown babies, which has been, you know, park walk, which has been an amazing opportunity for new mums to come together. And although we can't be inside with one another and we have to keep our distance, it was an opportunity to get outside and get the babies to sleep and walk and chat with new mums. So that's been great. And obviously get your expert advice on everything, physically and mentally and all of those things. So that's been great. Just thinking, there's also a Facebook group called Beautiful New Beginnings Antenatal and Practical Parenting Courses, and it's all done through Zoom, and it's free unless you want to pay £5 via PayPal, where it goes weekly, and you can get classes whenever you want to tap into them. But essentially it has classes on weaning, Pilates for new mums, also has baby classes like baby yoga, tummy time classes, which has been actually amazing. And for people out there that, you know, might be going through really difficult times in regards to work and jobs and everything, you know, it is a free service that's government funded. So that has been fantastic. A really positive, positive.
And something to just, you know, book a few things into a week that otherwise, with the restrictions that have been in place, feels a little bit like it's quite a long week, not seeing many people. And so actually having something like that pop up at the beginning of the week and think, oh, I'll do some Pilates on Tuesday, I'll do a sing and sign on Thursday, or whatever it might be. It's just another way to tap into a community of other new parents. And that's so important, isn't
it? Yeah, what's amazing about it is that hundreds of people do that Facebook group. So you don't really feel the pressure of being in a situation where you've all got to say your name and, you know, do whatever. You just kind of, if your baby's having a meltdown because needs feeding or is tired or it's nap time or whatever, you can literally just log out or close your laptop down and you don't actually have to say anything because no one's going to notice, really.
Silver lining.
You can slip out and no one will know.
Bye-bye.
Exactly.
The baby's lost the plot.
those have been absolutely amazing. And I think that friends that I've recommended it to have really enjoyed the classes, as have their babies. Especially the baby yoga gets the babies really laughing and giggling and smiling. So that's nice.
Oh, very sweet. Yeah. Charlie, finally, we always ask our guests the same question. If you were to add your best bit of advice and pop it on a mother box headed out to a brand new parent, what would it say?
Recently, a friend of mine said, in the first year, just really, really try not to beat yourself up. And I think that really has resonated, especially during like the pandemic. I think it's like for parents in general, really, rather, you know, regardless if they're new parents or not. I think it's just that that feeling of, I think we all do it. We're all our own worst critics when it comes to being the best that we can be. And when we feel like we're letting ourselves down, especially, you know, in these times that are incredibly emotional. It's tough. It's really tough. And so I think that kind of resonated with me, that I have to check in with myself and be kind to myself and know that I'm giving it all that I have, because obviously there are times of being a new mum where it's tough and it's 24 hours and it's a huge shock to the system. And I think there's some absolutely, you know, there's awesome, beautiful moments, and don't get caught up in the moments that are really tough and hard. And certainly don't beat yourself up.
Oh, that's what I would say. Lovely, that's good darling. Advice. A very, very good advice. Thank you so much for coming on today, Charlie. It's been so lovely having you.
Well, thanks, you both, Charlie, for everything.
Thanks once again to Charlie for sharing her story so honestly with us.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about the work that we do, look out for our books, The Little Book of Self-Care for New Mums and The Little Book of Self-Care for Mums-to-Be, where we will talk further about birth, parenthood, relationships and much more.
We've really enjoyed this episode. We're sure that you all have your own stories of your bubbers and their love for our partner this season, Sophie Le Giraffe, and we would love for you to share them with us.
Send us your photos and your stories to our Instagram at Notes from the Mother Box, and don't forget to tag at Sophie Le Giraffe UK on Facebook and Instagram to share your pics with her too.
Join us again next week for more chats with another amazing guest.
See you next time on Notes from the Mother Box.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.